And we're live. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm here from Jude from Flamingo, founder and CEO, president of the Flamingo. I'm really happy to have you here today. We had a chance to catch up at AIM. That was super exciting. I know I saw you a bunch at RecCon and with your interview booth. I thought that was one of the best moves I've seen in a long time for a conference setup. That was really cool. You guys did a good job there. Well thought through. And then... we're here to get to hell yes. And so one of the exciting things about this space is that Flamingo goes in is that obviously the resident experience is becoming really heightened, and the kind of residents you bring in and how they go through the whole initial first impressions of the building and organization and how you work is so important. And Flamingo is really leading the market in that space and certainly leading the conversation. Getting hell yes, people who are listening for the first time or maybe on the podcast, this conversation is about the getting to hell yes buyer, and the getting to hell yes buyer and the buyer's journey is someone who has already prioritized a problem to be solved. And one of the things that we talked about at AIM and everyone's kind of like acknowledging is that the age of persuasion is long gone beyond us. Many times the buyer has a better perspective on the problem that they're solving that we're trying to solve. They've looked at our websites. They've thought about who we are. They often come in already ready to go. I think we chatted about an example, or at least at AIM, I talked about an example where a buyer came in and knew exactly what they wanted to do. And it was just like pricing. Mm-hmm. And so like, if you can jump right to that conversation, it's really effective for everyone's time. So that's kind of what we want to hammer in on as we kind of close out the conversation. They may not know about the way that we solve the problem, but they know how to articulate their problem. And so that's things that we want to kind of angle in on. This is brought to you by IRCX. As always, IRCX is AI remote maintenance software for property management business, saving trips and triage. So you can see it, you can solve it, you can close it, solving all those work order problems that that persist in life, and helping you solve these problems a whole lot faster. So Jude, to you, hand the ball to you to get things going, and then kick us off a little bit of a background, and then what's the problem you guys solve at Flamingo? We'll go from there.
Yeah, so thank you for having me on this. I am excited to talk through what we do. So I'm Jude, and I am the founder and CEO of Flamingo. So for those of you that do not know Flamingo, or maybe know a little bit about us, Flamingo is a resident retention platform. So that's really what we solve for. And for us, it's one of the most important problems to solve in the industry because a lot of the industry has solved the sales problem. So ironically, this is a podcast reporting about like getting to the hell yes. I feel like in the apartment industry, most companies have really done an amazing job solving the hell yes for the resident and leasing cycle. So they have invested all these tools, whether it's leasing AI tools, or whether it's websites, or whether it's actually hiring like a bunch of like leasing agents, to having really sophisticated metrics to manage the sales cycle. So for the industry, they have really done an amazing job and have become really sophisticated when it comes to solving the sales problem. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the retention side, the same level of investment really hasn't happened.
So, well, I would argue that's
what it calls for.
Therein lies the gap. Mm-hmm. Like a hell yes buyer doesn't churn as much.
Yep.
Right. And so, like, how do we keep that going? You know, because the retention piece is such an important, well, you're right. It's such a big gap right now. The whole, like, who owns it? Who's accountable for it? Who gets fired when that happens, when it doesn't go right? It's all jump ball.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what we see, and a lot of Flamingo's data. This is really where we kind of hampered in on what we wanted to solve for. So as a quick context for Flamingo, how Flamingo got started is really as a services business. So we always knew we wanted to do like going to the software side. But where we started was providing like fitness classes and events to apartments. And as the company grew, we realized that we needed to have some way to show ROI. So the first step was to actually collect data, collect like RSVPs. So that's simply So we asked some of our customers, like, hey, you guys are spending all this money on Flamingo every month. Do you have a way that your residents could like sign up for those classes or for those events? And a lot of times they were like, no, we don't really have one. So we added a really basic resident app. So residents could use that app to sign up for the classes or the events. And then we started getting a lot of questions from residents about the classes, about the events. So we added like a really basic FAQ to the app. And when we did, that cut down on the number of questions that we got. And a few of our customers were like, oh, can we also add our resident guides to your app? And that's kind of where the information clicked in my mind. And then spent about 4 months where I went to every single apartment in Chicago to talk to the property managers, the leasing teams, the residents, to really understand how they work on a day-to-day basis. And from there, really got to understand workflows, the things that they struggle with, and then really came to realize that, especially after a lot of conversations with residents, that the biggest thing really lied in retention, or the biggest opportunity really lied in retention. And that's where we've really focused the last almost decade, yeah.
And the retention problems is unique in that there's a number of different experiences that influence the retention. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily held by a single person or even function. So how does Flamingo affect the retention metrics differently than the other alternative, like the kind of like the conventional approach to solving the problem?
Yeah, a really good question. So we have this name or thing that we call retention leak. So retention leak is essentially all the things that happen that makes that gets a resident to not want to renew or to leave. So to your point, it is owned by a lot of people and it happens all along the resident journey. Yeah. So let's even start at the very start. A resident comes to do a tour and that tour is completed. They talk to the leasing agent about all the things they like. They decide to sign a lease. And that resident moves in after signing their lease where during the leasing process, someone told them, this is how much your rent is going to be. This is how much this is going to be. But they somehow forget to mention like, oh, by the way, we have these 12 different fees that you have to pay. So you came to us where you said your budget was 2,000, but after all the additional fees, you are actually paying 2,500. That's the first area of retention leak where the resident is not actually getting what they thought they were getting. So they move in and then maybe their first day of move in, the leasing agent that was supposed to help them get adjusted, so do their tour and everything, or do their inspection and other things, they are not available. So that resident doesn't get the right onboarding because a lot of things get like missed. So that's another area where the resident gets upset. They didn't get what they needed. The resident,
isn't that cool? I mean, just funny, just to kind of like, and maybe this will be a thread that you keep going on. Like, it's like that you keep adding on to, stacking onto. It sounds like, and I heard this in one of our multifamily discussions like 2 weeks ago, that there's like you're tracking a mismatch between expectations and actual delivery.
Yeah, like, that's actually like the pricing comes down to.
Yeah, which like you start distrusting what you've agreed to.
Exactly.
And then you start looking for distrust.
Exactly. And that's where you get a lot of that tension between the landlord, which is, I use that word very expectationally right now, because that's what happens. Like a resident goes from looking at a team like, oh, this is a brand that I love, to this is just my landlord, because they have had so many of those like little disappointments along the way, whether it's they arrive and the unit isn't quite ready, or they send an email and for the resident, their expectation that someone's going to get back to them is 24 hours, but someone doesn't get back to them in 24, so it's like 48. The reason the resident has the expectation of the 24 hours or even less is because that resident is used to the Ubers of the world or the other like high-tech companies of the world where you have a question or an issue, gets like solved right away. But then for where they live, that doesn't get solved. So to what you've pointed out, it is a lot of expectations not being like met. So over time, how the resident feels about where they live slowly falls. And then when it's time for renewal, where they get that renewal offer and it's like, oh yeah, we want you to pay 3 or 5% more rent. The resident's like, what?
I just saw one of the customer experience people I worked with in kind of our other service lines had a post that came out, and it was talking about that exact same thing. And I'll post it in the comments after the show. But it's really about, like, you think you're great, but you're being compared against Amazon, Uber, Apple, like, and so like Netflix. So just because you think that you're great in your industry doesn't mean you're even meeting the expectations of your resident. And then especially how you described it, whereas like we're making promises about this, mm-hmm. and we deliver on this.
Correct.
And that's just not that immediately we get, like, as human beings, we're tuned to avoid pain and like traps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get distrustful. And as we get distrustful versus trustful, we start looking for reasons to not give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Then a year, you know, say 6 months from now, if a service request is late, we assume it's because this is a human being. Human beings assume that that's consistent with my first experiences versus just being someone's mistake or a bad day, you know?
Exactly. And I think you kind of hit it right on the head where once they have had those initial negative experiences, mm-hmm. everything that happens after that, the resident is going to ascribe negative intent. So mm-hmm. rather than the resident think like, oh, the maintenance team must really be overwhelmed because of all the other things that are happening, their thought is, well, that just goes along with how bad the operations is. So everything just like adds on to that negative view of the property. And that's mm-hmm. why when it's time for renewal, they decide like, well, this really isn't worth it for me to stay here.
How many data points in a year, like let's just say in an annual lease, mm-hmm. how many data points are available to predict the renewal, the likeliness to renew for a resident?
Mm-hmm. I'll say for it varies by company and the types of systems that they use. Mm-hmm. So to give you an example, if they have a way to automate the moving process, mm-hmm. They can track how long it took that resident to complete the moving process and how successfully they completed it. Mm-hmm. But if they are doing that offline, then there's no way to actually predict or see that.
Right.
If they are surveying residents across the entire life cycle, so most companies survey residents at like move in after a work order and then maybe a move out, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. But if they were surveying residents at every touch point, like let's say a resident sends an email to the management and then the management responds or solves the issue, that's another data point, like how was that interaction with the management team. Most mm-hmm. companies would track maintenance issues but not actual staff and office issues. So the number of data points is really predicted, is really based on what the property has in place. For customers that utilize Flamingo, we track everything. So we track all interactions. We survey across the entire life cycle of the resident. Mm-hmm. We also look at indirect channels. So one of the things on Flamingo is we have a resident app. So the app is the single interface for what everything the resident does. So work orders, pet rent, and everything else. Mm-hmm. In the app, residents are also able to send messages to their neighbors, to the management team, and there's a bulletin board where they can post, connect with their neighbors. So mm-hmm. within that bulletin board, we actually also read what residents write, and we use that as part of data points for how likely they are to renew. So if in the bulletin board, the resident is constantly complaining about management or about yep. if they've come up, for most companies, they don't have that data. But for Flamingo, we read that and we tie that to the resident's like profile. So we know, okay, this person a lot of their posts are very negative. So that takes a few points off of their likeliness to renew. So they are, and then same thing too, is someone using the amenities. So yeah, we see that a resident moved in and they are using none of the amenities. Then it also tells us, okay, this person isn't really getting the value that right, they are most likely paying for, because part of your rent involves the rooftop, the center, all those things. So if they're not actually using it, then they are paying more than they are actually benefiting from. So yep, there are dozens of data points to look at. It just comes down to what systems the property actually has in place.
Very interesting. I mean, I think the ability to capture all that information and create a predictive score, like, so does that mean Flamingo is connected into all the different apps? So you've got your resident app for booking amenities, et cetera, and tracking that. But with respect to maintenance and leasing acquisition and customer acquisition, do you tie into those systems as well?
Yeah. So within our app, we have our own native features like amenity reservations, but mm-hmm, then integrate with all the other systems that the resident needs. So we integrate with the property management systems. We integrate with some of the leasing tools. Mm-hmm. We integrate with access control systems. We integrate with pretty much everything that has and touches on resident data.
Interesting.
And then so from there, we are able to automate workflows. And then we are also able to use that data to know what needs to happen for each resident to get them to actually renew.
So on the renewal side, like who has the problem? Like, is it the, you know, in the kind of the typical team in a property management structure, mm-hmm, given who you guys, and I should put it this way, who buys the problem, right? Because like we find that it's I found that it's pretty fragmented when I ask the question about who owns renewals. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, people are solving the problem and buying solutions like Flamingo, right? It's happening. So who do you find usually steps up and says, I've got a problem around renewals, or at least I want to have predictability around my renewals, so we're going to do something different. So what's that role?
Yeah, really good question. So we interface with, I'll say, across all departments, so mm-hmm, operations, marketing and asset management, and then a lot. But I would say the people that tend to get excited the fastest is revenue management. So, and the reason is for a couple of things. So for some people that reach out to Flamingo, it might be a leasing agent that's like, I want to do a resident event. And we say, why do you want to do a resident event? They're like, well, we want to get engagement. Why do you want to get engagement? Because we want people to feel a strong sense of community. Why do you want a strong sense of community? It's because people want to stay. Oh, we want people to stay longer. So it always comes back to retention. The issue is that most companies think about it really far removed from the actual like metric. So we do a lot of education to get them to understand that some of these things you're doing are for retention, but they might not be the best ROI for you. Mm-hmm. But for the people that get it the fastest, I would say, are the revenue managers. And the reason behind that is because it's easier for them to really see and understand the numbers. So mm-hmm, for a resident that decides not to renew and that moves out, for most companies, the cost to replace a resident is anywhere from like $3,000 to $5,000. Mm-hmm. And if you look at cap rates and overall like NOI, that is almost $40,000 in value to the,
yeah, for sure,
the property. And to solve that, it's really, really simple. And I mean that the renewal problem is extremely simple to solve. It's just that companies lack the data and the systems and the philosophy to put it at the forefront of everything. Because so far, what they have put at the forefront is sales. So mm-hmm, sales has been, it's why everyone uses like two or three ILS services. It's like, let's continue to get new people in. It's like, no, let's do the things that to keep the current people there longer rather than just constantly getting people in. So the challenge that we have is it's like a philosophical change for the industry to focus on retention.
It totally is. And we're finding that every single day, like having people talking to folks that are astute about retention and strategic about retention. It's hard to find. I find also like when we have conversations in the market, because like on the maintenance side, we have a kind of like a direct touch on retention. Like average age of open work orders is a leading indicator of retention at the unit level, right? And so if we take a look at those that are get excited about retention, like I found it interesting you talk about the leasing, like the revenue management side of things. So the leasing function, right? And what's interesting is that retention, this isn't fully formed. So apologies to everybody out there if I figure this out in real time, but like retention feels like a site level experience, but revenue management is a corporate level experience more and more, right? As we get into centralized leasing and all those sort of things. So like accountability for retention resides offsite, but accountability for executing a retention or delivering those inputs to what creates retention is an onsite experience. And so it's like, you know what I mean?
Right on the head, which is that it's a big problem because it hits across different roles. So both on the onsite and then the corporate is the ones that really need to make it a priority and force it to the onsite teams. So if you kind of look at how I mentioned this earlier, how the work is like structured and how what data that people track. So for corporate, if you are going to lease up a property or you bought a new property, I need to staff it. Most people say they need a property manager, they need an assistant property manager, they need two leasing agents, and they need maintenance agents and maintenance techs. Very rarely would you see whoever decides on what staffing needs to look like. Very rarely would you see someone say, oh, we need a property manager, assistant property manager, and we need like one retention agent and then one leasing agent. So you can already tell like the priority for retention isn't there already.
There's no role. There's no VP retention. There's no VP.
Correct.
Regional manager.
And that's why the industry is pretty much stuck at like the 50 to 54% retention.
Totally agree.
And for customers and the people that really put the resources in, we see the 65 to 75% retention very quickly. So it really is like that philosophical difference. And
10 points is huge.
It's huge. Yep. So
if you just think about that, you know, like at a 300, like just think of that, just sorry, the quick math for everyone listening. Like if you got a 300, let's say 100 unit building, it's easier math. Like you're picking up 10 points, right? That's 10 units. That's 10 units of rent. Let's say 30 days average vacancy, right? With $60 a day of average lost revenue for each unit. Mm-hmm. Like that translates into 6 times 380, like 180,000 of NOI. If I'm doing math right or wrong, somewhere around there. You're talking about 10 units.
Yeah, when we talk to our customers, we typically see about, it's like 2 to 4 million for the average in NOI. So it is. Why it's like this priority. Is and just such a simple thing. The issue is that the industry isn't built for retention, or the philosophy in the industry isn't really built for retention. So as the example, had a call with one of our customers, and one of the things that they have on Flamingo is the surveys, and the surveys track resident satisfaction at all points along that resident journey. So within the platform, we trigger various workflows. One of those is a ticket when we see that a resident needs attention, because let's say they moved in and something, they were unhappy with the moving process, or they had X happen and they were not happy. So the teams, for most other industry, the customer success team, the support team, the whoever team, would immediately reach out and get that issue addressed. But we see and have such a hard time trying to convince our customers that you need to have a dedicated group or whatever that reaches out to every single person that has kind of raised their hand to say, I'm not happy, or this didn't, like you said earlier, this did not meet my expectations. And for a lot of people, we see it's just like not a priority or something that they don't prioritize. Had a customer that had, I kid you not, over like 200 open tickets, which are residents that have said they're not happy about something. Rather than actually reach out to those residents, they decided that what they needed to do was to throw a resident event. And I'm like, come on, dude. Like, really?
It's funny. I just posted yesterday, maybe day before yesterday, this, like, I heard this at AIM, is like, resident events are where you spend NOI to have your residents complain about the maintenance experience.
Yep. I absolutely. So for this customer, I was like, come on, like, these people have literally told you that they are unhappy. And what you want to do is, like, I get it. I love a party. I love resident events. We over like 1,000 resident events are managed each month on Flamingo's platform, because we have a platform where property managers can book different events. So I love events, but events are what you do as that like little extra, not what you do as a core element of retention.
Mm-hmm. It's like a wedding anniversary, right? Like, that's one day a year, and there's 364 other days of the year that can be, you know, incredible. Yeah. And like, it's funny when you get into, because we're talking earlier about pain aversion, like, we cannot forget that these are human beings inside these beds and heads, right? And like, these human beings are hardwired to avoid pain. And so we remember painful moments, and everyone, it's common understanding, like, bad news travels 10 times fast. You know, you've got to put do five positive things for every single negative thing. Like, one event doesn't actually counteract even a Google review. One star, you need five stars to counteract one star in the law of averages. And so it's all understood that raising the floor is the most important thing to do.
Correct. And most other industries have figured it out and they do it. So that's why, for me, I personally get excited, because I'm like, what we need to do here is so simple and it has such impact across every single thing.
So then this is, you know, we understand what we're talking about here. It's retention. Not everyone prioritizes it. I think it's a better word, because everyone says they cares, but not everybody prioritizes it or maybe funds it. So then how do you find prospects that are most likely to prioritize retention?
So a couple of ways for that. One is people that actively reach out to us. So luckily, there are a lot of companies that realize that they have a retention problem, or realize that even though they are at the industry average or maybe slightly above that, that they could do much better. Because ultimately, where we want to get our customers is like 75% retention. So a lot of companies are starting to see that benefit. So that's one way, is just inbound people hear about us, or someone refers them to us, or they come in looking at one part of our platform, like maybe they come in thinking about like events, and then we talk to them like, this is actually what you need. So that's one. And then two, we look at companies that give signals that they really care about their like retention. So it's a lot of it are companies that like REITs, they are companies that are long-term holds. So we focus a lot on companies whose business model is focused around like the long-term. So they are not like going to develop, flip, and then sell it. It's the companies that are focused on that longer-term brand and longer-term relationship with your residents.
So then is it more the owner than the manager that you focus on?
We do both, but we definitely do focus more on the ownership groups.
Yeah. Let's just faster sales, because they feel along. And so this they is see great.
More than anything else. They see the pain much more quickly.
Yeah. So this is outstanding. Yeah. We're doing better than most of my calls. So we know the problem, the retention piece. Why is it important? Because for obvious reasons, it's cheaper to retain a resident than it is to acquire one. And it's just so much easier for everybody. There's so much less waste. You do it with all the different data collections of the experiences, so you're able to predict who's going to retain. Who's going to retain? You you sell better for to the revenue function because they have clear accountability around the revenue piece. Owners are better than managers or faster than managers. Sell to both, but owners are faster than managers because they have the long-term hold. Or owners that are in long-term hold have a better conversion rate because they care more. It's a more of a priority to them because
that's their business. The money gets to them faster. They see the money actually gets in their pocket. So for third-party managers, we still work with them, but they don't see it immediately because for
the I feel the same thing.
Much salient, correct.
And the one thing that I'm finding interesting about that is that with the third party business has grown by like 70% in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So there's less owners on the decision-making thing. And I'm curious to see how this is going to play out because maybe it's a function of more owners came in the business, or maybe it's a function of more owners don't want to manage or that managing is hard, but I don't know how this is going to finish.
It's funny watching doing some studies around that. The thesis around that is it is much easier to be a third party manager for a lot of different reasons. It's mm-hmm. like starting a business. Like if you wanted to be a third party manager, I don't want to say it's easy, but what you really need is one, just make calls to ownership groups and say, hey, I will manage your property for you. Mm-hmm. They say yes, and then hire some people to do it. So it's very like an asset light model. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to own, you need to have a little bit of capital and then find investors and then go through the whole due diligence process and do all of that before you can actually acquire that specific property.
Yeah, one's a P&L business and one's a balance sheet business.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good intel. And so when you go out the market and you're starting to look to have the conversation, do your buyers have, like, I'll frame this. This is kind of a new concept or developing concept that I was talking with Joe Summers last week. Is like there's this idea of like creating urgency that we, sales has talked about forever. But then what I'm trying to frame this is, but there's what if you could capture urgency, right? Meaning that they've got to do something by a certain time frame. So are you able to kind of like test for that, or how do you test for their timelines?
That's something that we definitely struggle with. So I don't think I have a good answer to that because I'm always not sure what everyone's experience is in the space, but for us, we definitely have the longer cycles. And mm-hmm. part of it for us is because we replace a lot of single point solutions within the space. Mm-hmm. And we also require a lot of process changes, and we also require like a philosophical change for how they like manage. So it's not a quick do this and this happens. It is quick, but things need to change. So mm-hmm. how operations happens needs to change. So the people management element is a big part of that. So when we speak with our customers, we're pretty upfront, like, you will see results, but in order to see, you'll see results quickly. But in order to see results quickly, you need to change a lot of things.
Yeah, because a lot of things are going wrong.
For that, yeah, and not everyone is ready for that.
Yeah, and do you find that when you raise that, like, is that more of a filter for you as like how ready are they for change?
I'll say yes, because we focus a lot on outcomes. So like our whole model is tight around like outcomes. So if someone is going to purchase our platform but not do what is needed to get those outcomes, it's bad for the both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we do that, especially in the pilot. We make sure we have agreement mm-hmm. on what the outcome is. And the number one reason, I mean, there's probably two reasons. The first reason is so we know why we're doing this. But number two is that when we see adoption dip a little bit, mm-hmm. we want to be able to escalate back to the buyer about what we agreed on mm-hmm. as an objective. and surface that this is a partnership here, and both of us need to activate. And if we don't get your people on side with the change, then we're both going to miss our targets here.
Correct.
You know, is this still a priority? Are these targets still a priority? Because like, if we don't have that mutually agreed on metric, then I feel like we're always just asking them to do something versus like helping them reach a goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. It goes back to what you mentioned earlier about like expectations. And any technology worth its salt or whatever weight requires you to really think about the people management and really focus on making sure that expectations are aligned right from the start, and then talking through what is actually required in mm-hmm. order to do that goal.
So when you go talk to people, like using, you know, what are they typing into Google before they find you?
So a couple of things. So people might look for retention strategies. They might look for resident engagement. A lot of our focus has been to really build a brand. Mm-hmm. So people specifically are searching for like Flamingo. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people don't know what problems they specifically have. They just know like, oh, it might be looking for retention strategy or not retention or like occupancy problems. Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily try to get people to that. We just really focus on building a brand that people like come directly to us. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, being on this helps get the message across, and then hopefully someone hears and they're like, oh, we have a retention problem. Oh, I didn't realize it was that simple to solve.
Well, I think that also the work that we both have to do is raise the profile of retention as a priority.
Yeah, so that's a lot of what we do. So a lot of what we do is just that education on actually showing people like what the numbers look like and what is possible. And also goes back to just what we spoke about, which is selecting customers that are willing to actually change, because it's much easier to, when we are talking to someone new, to say, hey, X percent of our customers get to 65% retention or 70. If we have that conversation and we say, well, only like 10% get to that, it'll be like, well, it doesn't really look like it's successful. So mm-hmm. we really have to work to make sure the outcomes are there, because for a lot of people, when we mention what we do, they don't believe it because they're like, that doesn't seem possible. Like, how could you mm-hmm. get us to 65 or 75% retention?
Interesting. No, they don't. They feel like it's like the 4-minute mile. Like it's like a barrier that can't be.
Exactly what I was going to say. That's literally what I was going to say. It reminds me of Roger Bannister.
Yeah.
Where before he ran the 4-minute mile, no one had done it. And then he did it. And then in a few weeks, literally happened. I'm glad that you were thinking exactly.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. There's a really good story about that.
All the time. So we focus
Australian
on to show it.
Yeah. He'd said that the Australian that subsequently beat Bannister said that he didn't believe it was beyond the realm of the human body. Then Bannister broke it because his coach believed he could. And then like 2 weeks later, it was Australian or Swedish, I can't remember, but he broke then the Bannister's record, but 2 weeks later, but no one remembers that guy.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. It's when I did it. So we view it exactly the same way. And that's a big example I use all the time for our team, that this is the challenge that we have, that people don't believe it's possible. Because if you have for 30 years had like 30%, or not 30, if you had like 50% retention, then someone coming to tell you like, oh, this could be 75, you'd be like, yeah, I'm sure you're right.
You know, I need to learn some lessons from you guys, because like we have remote maintenance. We tend to solve like 50% mm-hmm. of tickets without a trip in like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And people it's really hard to get them to believe it. Mm-hmm. And we have one customer that's at 68%
yeah.
at remote resolve, right? And like, there's just no way. I can't even believe that as being humanly possible. And you go, it is. It's completely possible. Yeah. And until they do it and prove it and commit to it, there's even some that want to do it to prove you wrong.
I love that.
You know what I mean?
Maybe that's the route to go, like, well, I'll pay you if it doesn't work.
Yeah, like they want to be so right about, they want to be so right that they'll do it to prove us wrong. And then ultimately those skeptics, it's amazing to have those skeptics do testimonials.
Yeah.
They're the ones that literally say, I actually didn't believe it mm-hmm. was possible.
Yeah.
And then now, like, I can't imagine my life without
your
product.
Really goes back to what I was saying, which is really like picking customers, because we spend so much time to make sure that our customers get the results, because it takes just a few misses where we now have our, for me, I don't want to get our data like messed up. Like I view our customer metrics. So the success that they get as our own like personal metric. So
well, you have to be in the renewal.
Yeah.
You're in the renewal business. So your renewal numbers have to be.
Yeah. Like, I would hate to be like, well, yeah, only certain customers are able to do it. It just doesn't come up as like, yep, 99% get the result that they are coming after.
Which is interesting, because it gets into the, I just talked to this a couple shows ago, this concept that as sellers, mm-hmm. we need to think like we're a buyer as well. Mm-hmm. Meaning that we need to be deliberate about the kind of customer we want to attract. Mm-hmm. Because to what you were saying earlier, or, you know, we can't lead a horse, we can lead a horse to water, but we can't make him drink.
Yeah.
That's the truth about people, is that if they're not seeking change, if they're not actively looking to solve a problem, mm-hmm. they're going to be less likely to be a successful customer. And so all that energy that goes into conversion and all that energy that goes into standing them up and onboarding them is lost if they don't feel the pain to change.
Yeah. It's funny. Of my favorite customers of ours, the owner is directly involved. So they use a third-party manager, but the owner literally logs into Flamingo. He's looking at everything that's happened. And he came to us because for him, it was just an issue that he's had in his mind for such a long time. So there was so much philosophical alignment. When he heard, like, oh my God, I cannot believe there's a company that's actually doing what I have always thought is like possible. So we are working like one-on-one across like everything. And it's so exciting to see how much easier it is when someone in that decision-making perspective like gets it. So I've seen the guy like log in on a Saturday to respond to a resident issue to the platform, because he's like, well, the on-site team isn't available, and he's like, we need to like do it. So it's like really amazing to like see.
Yeah, those are the, especially when you get into like, you know, early adopters, but like they're not just early adopters. That's not a technology adoption problem. That's a problem. That's a technology adoption, evidence of technology adoption or desire to adopt technology, that is someone who's passionate about the problem.
Yeah.
Right. And they know, I mean, I imagine at the owner level, they're the ones that go to the bank. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that sign off on the financing.
Yeah.
They're the ones, all that stuff. And so they know how much conviction I need to have around that revenue line so I can get financing for my number.
We've literally had that same conversation. So they just get it, or he just like gets it, and it's like to the pocket, like how much of a difference this is going to make.
Because if that asset's worth more, he can get more of a financing event. He can even maybe create liquidity.
Yeah.
He can get past the, if he's got promote, right? Yeah. He can get more of the promote on it, get it past all of his partners. And so there's way more in it for him, for them, from a retention perspective, because they can get a higher asset valuation on more. You know, because the there's going to be a risk analysis on revenue, mm-hmm. and that risk analysis on revenue is going to affect your asset valuation from the bank's perspective.
Exactly. And the other way that we'll try to really get people to understand the problem, for people that don't get it intuitively, is one thing that I do is I ask people, like, raise your hand if you think that people love to move. But what was no one ever raised their hand. I'm like, exactly, like, residents don't like to move. No one enjoys moving. People move when there's such a problem that they're like, I'm going to go through that crazy amount of work and just heartache just to get out of this situation.
They're leaving pain. They're consciously avoiding pain.
Yeah.
And I think that what's interesting about like the resident experience is that if you're feeling pain on a day to day, you are constantly reminded about the decision you made to lease that unit. Mm-hmm. And that reminder of a bad decision gnaws at you. It's not like you can avoid it. You have to walk through it every day. You may have to walk through and live with the broken dishwasher or the whatever that's not working, or the something that's the messy, the stain outside the building, or all that. Mm-hmm. And that constant reaffirmation of the bad decision you made grinds at people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a drip Chinese, you know, the water torture. Okay. You know, I'll watch my language. But, you know, so when you guys go out there and they've articulated they're trying to find renewal, and we talked about one solution that's commonly considered is resident events. Mm-hmm. What other solutions do they consider when they're thinking about solving a retention problem?
So I think some of the ones that are more common, like how do we, as you mentioned, like how do we improve maintenance site turnaround times? Mm-hmm. And then people commonly look for how do we improve like resident experience? Mm-hmm. So one example might be, oh, our residents right now log into too many apps. So for mm-hmm. them, that's a resident experience issue. So they want to consolidate that. So that's one way to also look at it, is through the resident experience like lens. And then other ways that they have tried to solve for the retention piece is some that are better than other ones. I'll say the events are probably the most common, or the thing mm-hmm. that comes up the most. And then we see people offer like rewards or gift cards as well, mm-hmm. Incentivize and renewal. And then we've even heard a lot of companies, they try to push referrals, not just as a channel to increase occupancy, but they have pushed referrals as a way to bring friends into the building. Because let's say you bring five of your best buddies to come live at the same site. Yeah, that works. Like, most likely you are probably not going to leave, because you're like, oh, my best friend Tom is like one floor down. Steve is like a few floors like up. So you are more likely to like stay as well too. So part of the reason why our platform works really well is because we look at all those different things. So it's not just one thing that solves for renewal. It's many, many things along the resident journey that all like adds up. So I mentioned earlier, it's what we call like retention leak. So multiple different things that need to be solved for.
Well, I think the challenge,
75,
the retention challenge in every business is that like leasing or selling or closing has a quarter that you got to hit, mm-hmm. or a lease up that's got to be made, that's got target that's got to be hit. And when a lease gets signed, one person gets paid. Mm-hmm. But when a lease is renewed, I mean, there may be a spiff for somebody, but it took a team mm-hmm. to do it. And maybe that team might not, given the turnover of the site level, part of that team might not even be there anymore.
Correct.
So it's hard to make a single person accountable for retention. Mm-hmm. And that's not an excuse for not making a priority, but mm-hmm. it's a natural constraint.
Yeah, and that's why it has to be a corporate level strategy mm-hmm. rather than like a site level initiative. So I mentioned earlier that a big part we look at is that philosophical alignment, because if we don't align with our customer, it's just like not going to happen. Yeah. Because they're like, oh yeah, let's just hire more leasing agents. So let's do this. Let's give away this.
And more water in the leaky bucket.
Yeah, exactly. Literally more water in the leaky bucket.
Yeah. So when you get in there and you're testing for philosophical alignment, what objections do you typically hear?
The biggest one is definitely they don't think it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like that lack of like, we don't think that's possible to have. Oh, a recent one is, well, I mean, our budget is here. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's great that you have that, but transfer some of that budget to actually drive like retention.
Yeah. The budget conversation is common. given that budgets are done in like whatever the fall. And then it is a battle for that reallocation of that budget. And then figuring out who has discretionary budget authority on that line item. And that can move the budget for happy hours and pizza parties and move that over to, you know, a software to
be strategic about it.
Yeah. Like that's finding that person that can make that call. Mm-hmm. What I'm finding is that it's business, it's building by building. Like we had two calls yesterday. One of them would never have been a prospect. Mm-hmm. Like just the person's role and the person's company did not fit who we consider to be a fast buyer.
Yeah.
But this person has a direct line to the ownership group and they make decisions together. So the role was a you know, we're going to test that role. But we'll see what happens. But I'm curious to test for more of those. I might even put that in the qualifiers. Like, hey, we like to work with this role that has a direct line with this owner, with an owner. Is that you? Because you almost want them to disqualify themselves or qualify in or qualify out.
And I think I like that because that's a lot of what we do, because it forces them to really consider if this makes sense for them to pursue, because it's like, well, I don't think this makes sense for us, because it's a waste of both people's times if they are going to look and evaluate a solution that philosophically isn't going to actually work for them.
Or they can't buy.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. Interesting. So when you take a look at people that onboard, or maybe a younger you, and you think about the kind of advice that you are collecting now, or the knowledge you collected now, what one piece of advice would you give them, a younger you or somebody coming on board, in terms of trying to find that hell yes customer?
I think really narrow down on the one metric that is your North Star. So it's absolutely that retention. So it's forced us to really align on everything that includes like the product that we're building to how we present that to customers. Because if we go through demos or go through whatever, where we focus on a thousand different things, and not, for the customer, it just creates a sense of confusion. Mm-hmm. But if we focus in on that one thing where we can show this is what it's going to do for you, and it turns out that's something that they believe in, then it's just like much easier. Then that's where the details can like come. So it's much easier to filter out and then to focus.
So you kind of brought in what you were saying earlier before, is that the North Star metric that has to be important to that philosophically aligned buyer, right? Because if they care about, if they get paid on leases signed, a new lease is signed, I mean, they're naturally not going to be philosophically aligned.
Exactly.
Right. And so the ones that get paid on revenue and they understand that revenue is a function of acquisition and retention, they're going to be philosophically aligned and they're going to be thinking about the metric that matters that you help drive.
Correct.
Makes it easier, right?
Exactly. And we see it on the same curve, like any adoption where you have early adopters. So how we see it is, they are early adopters to retention. And most people are not adopters to retention. They are more sales focused, like leasing focused. And then as we get more wins with those early adopters, and then those laggards are going to see what the retention focused people are doing differently. And then
I'd be curious, and I don't know how easy this would be to do. I'd be curious to see the correlation. I'm going to tie this all together. So as we open the conversation around expectations and actual delivery, right? We talked about that. I'd be curious to know if there's a correlation between those that are leasing focused, right? And how that affects the Google reviews. Mm-hmm. Meaning that by overemphasizing on leasing, do we unintentionally create an environment that is going to over promise that, and then there's reality of under delivering doesn't mean you're under delivering the,
no, I think I know what you're asking. Absolutely. It's, I'm a leasing agent and I have a quota and I have a revenue goal that I want to hit both personally and for the company. And I know that this prospect said that their budget is like $2,000. Mm-hmm. Know that that the unit itself is $2,000. And then we have this kind of fee. It's not necessarily like hidden fee, but it does add $100 to what that resident is going to spend every mm-hmm. month. Should I tell them that upfront right now, which might put them signing that lease at risk? Or do I just kind of push it under the table and get them to sign the lease? And then they are going to hear about that $100. Maybe it's the trash fee. They'll hear about it a week after they move in. And by that time, it's too late. So for that leasing agent, everything that's set up is for them to hide that fact.
Yeah.
So then the resident moves in. And then they get like pissed. And then a year later, they're like, I'm not going to renew. Like my budget was $2,500. You guys lied to me. I'm actually paying $2,600. So a retention focused organization, it would be, let's make sure that we are fully aligned with that resident. So they know that they are actually going to be paid $2,600. They have everything's aligned. So they know. And then when the resident signs that, they are not going to get any unhappy surprises. They are going to be more likely to stay. So yeah, it does require a lot of changes in how things are done. And I think it is true that for leasing focused organizations, it might not really be there.
And they might have a higher degree of negative reviews.
Yeah, absolutely. And I posted one example, I think maybe 2 months ago or so, where a resident, after she moved out, she left a very detailed negative review. And a lot of what she wrote was very focused on the things that did not meet her expectations, most of which were all the extra fees that she had to pay. Mm-hmm. So she basically said, happy with the property, beautiful, happy with the team, great team, but all these fees, no one told me.
I was misled.
These fees, yeah.
I was misled. Wow. Okay. Interesting. So philosophical alignment, focus on the metric. And the back end of that all is like stand back. Philosophical alignment includes, how everyone is achieving the objective of revenue in our case, resident retention.
Correct.
Outstanding. If people are interested and curious about hearing more about Flamingo and how they can solve their retention problems, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So check out getflamingo.com. And if you want to hear more about how we do things, and you can listen, we have a podcast as well. So we have the Apartment Rebels podcast, which is around people that really do think differently. So Flamingo is not for everyone. We do work with the rebels that see the problem and understand that retention really needs to be at that 75%, not the 50%.
Yeah. No, that's, and it's funny because like the calling them rebels is it's almost tongue in cheek. Right, because it's like it's a practical rebel, like it's like
but you're not going to see a lot of people hiring retention agents anytime soon, so it does take rebels to really put the process, the system, and the investment that's needed to drive retention. Not everyone can be a rebel, but for the happy few, please reach out. Yeah.
Very practical rebel with a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So who should we have on next?
I have a couple of recommendations. Let's see. I don't know if you've had Grady on.
Grady Newman?
Yeah.
I had him a name. He was on a name.
Okay, so you already had him on. Who else? You should have one of my buddies on. We went to college together.
Love to.
So Casey, he works with Whale.
Okay.
So they are trying to change the game on deposits.
On deposits, cool. What's his last name?
I'll mispronounce that, but Hendren. I'll send that over to you.
Okay, cool. Casey. We'll get it. That's awesome, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for everything today. I think that I like the conversation on retention is especially important these days, especially as we're looking at like just the formula of of the capital, the cap rate, and the risk-adjusted cap rate, right? Like, that's a whole concept that didn't really exist before. And so the risk-adjusted, discounting your cap rate because you've got fluctuations, you've got risk-adjusted revenue, is something people are dealing with these days. If you're listening to this not live, add some comments to the chat, and Jude and I both get that, get notifications and can jump in and answer questions. If you listen to the podcast, obviously comment, add notes, whatever you'd like, comment, subscribe if you're on whatever your platform you're listening on. This is always valuable for the show and helps us keep going. Jude, I really appreciate the conversation today. It was great seeing you at AIM, having the conversation there first and kind of kicking off. I love your origin story around the tracking return of time. Okay. 10 years is awesome. So thank you, buddy. Good seeing you. Are you going to our park memoize?
Yeah, I'll be there.
You'll be there? All right, I'll see you there too as well. All right. Take care. Bye. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye. And we're out.